Hey, I'm Robbie Kramer. You're listening to the Leverage Podcast, where we discuss using your social skills to hack dating, travel, finding your dream job, and becoming a complete man. Well, hey guys, welcome to the Leverage Podcast. I have a special guest on today, Jeff Callahan. He's come from becomemorecompelling.com. I love talking to people that are, that have like similar niches that aren't in the dating space. And that is Jeff to a T. And I'm going to ask you a little bit about how you got into it and all that stuff. But you know, there's so often in my background as a dating coach, I'm always interviewed dating guys, but Jeff isn't a dating guy. He helps people to have better conversations, how to connect, how to become more compelling, as his website says. So Jeff, welcome to the call, and give us a little background on who you are and how'd you get into all this stuff.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be on the podcast, Robbie. And I wanted to call something else. So I read an article of yours, and the picture I think was amazing, and I think you're doing the world a service. And it's where you have two pictures next to each other. One is a standard white V-neck shirt, and the other is a white Affliction shirt. And you said no on the Affliction shirt, so I knew I really like you. So I think that you're doing the best work possible.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it pains me anytime I see someone wearing an Affliction shirt. It's what can you do? You know, it's crazy.
It's a note for all the guys on the call. If you have one of those, like, no shame. Just take it out to a trash can tonight and light it on fire, and we're all going to be happy.
There's no one definitely on this call that would be caught dead wearing an Affliction shirt. I would have already gone to their house and personally assaulted them. But maybe people listening to the recording will. So if that's you, yeah, if you hear a knock on the door,
you have been warned. So a little bit, and I'm so happy to be on the call, because I think that social skills, it's such an important area of life, because it impacts everything that you do, everything from your career to your relationships, to just your relationships with friends. So I think it can impact every area of your life, and dating is a big part of your social life. So I'm happy to be on the call, and I'm happy to spread some knowledge around having great conversations, how to thrive in group conversations. A little bit of my background. I came from a place where I used to have a horrible speech impediment. Like, I stuttered so bad that I couldn't say my own name. And that kind of gave way to a point in my life where I knew something had to change. So I went on kind of a decade plus long self-development binge, and mountains of books and seminars and everything you can imagine later, and a lot of practice, because that's, at the end of the day, that's what's most important. Here I am, and I have my own company where I help people become more charismatic and more socially skilled. So I'm super excited to spread some knowledge to you guys.
Yeah. So what was kind of the pain point that got you into it? You know, everyone has their, you know, their reason for getting into something. Sometimes it's motivated by pleasure. I feel like a lot of the time, especially in the area of social skills, social dynamics, you know, guys who kind of get this stuff at a young age, it never even occurred to them that other people might not be as up to speed, just because it's not really taught in school so much. You know, it's just kind of like this natural thing that either happens for some guys and others it doesn't. You know, I was one of the guys in the latter categories, and usually people that are teaching a skill, you know, they're their own biggest success story in a way. And I get the feeling that that's probably you, but I want to ask to make sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a great point, because it's one of those things where I feel like a lot of people who kind of came by it naturally, and I don't even like to use that word necessarily, because I feel like no one is a natural. We all learn it at some point, because like you said, Robbie, it's not taught in schools, and it most definitely should be, because a lot of us have to learn this at some point. For some folks, that's going to be in their late teens. For some, it's going to be in their 20s, some in their 30s and beyond. I'm 30. And it's amazing what a difference it can make in every aspect of your life. And for me, it was really just feeling that pain of, I feel like I can't communicate my thoughts effectively. And even when I do, even back then when I had the speech impediment and I was stuttering, and it just felt like I was in a prison of my own making. And so I wanted to kind of bust out, shoot the warden, and burn down the prison on the way out. And that's a quote from a Scott Adams book that the guy that created Dilbert, and he actually had a period in his life where he couldn't speak for 3 years because he had a medical condition that prevented him. So I'm just a big fan of empowering people to communicate their messages in an impactful and a powerful way.
So what did you do to get past the speech impediment you have? My mom is a speech pathologist, and at a young age, she worked with me quite a bit. I couldn't say my own name. I called myself Wobby. But I have encountered some really bad cases of stuttering, and you know, she's given me some insight into the field, but I'm curious, what did you have to go through?
You know, I just remember a lot of just kind of a combination of a few things, actually. I remember, as silly as it sounds, like singing in the car. And just when I was in sort of a safer location where I would be immune to public ridicule, like not a crowded Starbucks, not, you know, a mall on a Saturday, I would practice talking. And that really helped a lot. And when I learned that being able to breathe, and how the more you breathe, the better you're going to speak typically. So a tip for any people listening is, if you can breathe, that's fuel that's going to fuel your ability to project, your ability to have control over your voice. And I remember just doing a lot of that. And a lot of it, truthfully, was just putting myself in super uncomfortable situations where I might, you know, approach someone, talk to them, and yeah, it might go horribly, but the next time it went a little less horribly. And then on my site, I actually have a post where I talk about how I had 89,400 conversations over a period of 10 years. So I really put myself through the ringer, and each conversation got easier and easier and easier. And now it's funny, it's almost difficult for me to remember what it was like being on the other side of that kind of situation.
I can totally relate to that. And I'm curious how you tracked that number. I'm guessing mine is somewhere around that same ballpark. I have been at this about the same time as you have, 10 years. And I'm not sure what you did exactly to approach each conversation. Most of mine happened to be going to hit on girls and just going out to the bars. And you know, it was mostly geared towards that. But you know, what were those 89,000 conversations mostly comprised of, and how did you keep track?
Yeah, so I actually didn't start tracking until a couple of years ago, and I started tracking my conversations on a daily basis, and then I extrapolated that number backwards, and subtracted a few thousand. It's honestly closer to 100,000, but I stopped tracking because yeah. I didn't want to overestimate, so I intentionally skewed down. But you know, it's a good segue into some of the lessons I want to teach tonight, which is there's something I teach called conversational muscle memory. And this is something that I did for myself, number one, and it just happens to work for other people, where when you leave your house in the morning, when you start tiny conversations throughout your day, it's going to be easier for you to start more conversations, so that when it's happy hour, 6 o'clock, and you see a girl that you want to talk to, well, guess what? Is it going to be easier for guy A, who hasn't talked to anyone all day, or guy B, that has been starting tiny conversations throughout his entire day? He's talking to his driver with Uber. He's talking to the doorman at his apartment. When you have these tiny low stakes conversations, it's so much easier to capitalize on momentum and keeping that conversational ball rolling.
Totally. Yeah. Just being warmed up. I always like to think of conversations, human interactions, more of like a sport than of something you're studying in a classroom. And I know when I play sports, if I'm not warmed up, I'm going to feel like crap, miss a bunch of easy shots.
You're going to pull a hamstring.
Yeah. Injure myself. I guess the way that looks in conversation is, you know, say something that just doesn't land or make a fool out of yourself.
And you know, it's funny, like I've been thinking about this a lot lately, and I've been trying to think of some good metaphors for conversation skills, because it's both the balance of being intentional with what you say, but not being overly attached to the outcome. Because I feel like when I talk to guys that have just kind of started down this path, they're super hung up on like all the branching conversational trees. Like if any of you guys play video games, when you think of like those video games where you get to like have a conversation and press X for this, press Y for that. If you get too caught up into those outcomes, it really hamstrings, pun intended, your ability to actually have a dynamic conversation.
Totally. Yeah, one metaphor I like to use is when you're in that zone or when you're warmed up, it's kind of like when you catch a basketball in the paint. And if you're cold, you're probably going to throw the ball away or get your shot blocked, make some crazy decision that the game is going to be moving really fast. But when you're warmed up, everything slows down and you see different options for different plays and you usually pick the right one. It's like you're in slow motion. You have all this extra time. So when you made that, when you were talking to everyone during the day and having all those warming up conversations, that's what came into my mind. So maybe you can use that somewhere.
I like that. And, you know, just to show people on the call, like, I'm not perfect. I'm not perfect by any means. So the other week, my wife and I ran into some of her friends, and I thought this guy was like, I thought he put his fist out to give me the rock. And so I stuck my fist out and nothing happened.
And that's always awkward.
It was about as awkward as it could be. And now, you know, I've kind of developed sort of a bulletproof vest of like, oh, you know what? Now I just think it's really, really funny. But years ago, I would have thought about that for weeks on end. And there's something that I talk about called flush, fix, and forget, where if you're in a situation, maybe a joke doesn't land, maybe you throw up the rock and you don't get anything. If you can kind of flush the emotion from that, and then you can think about a way to fix it and say like, well, next time I might do this or that, and then forget about it because you do not need to dwell on any like shortcomings or things that could kind of mushroom into just a part of your identity.
Yeah, I agree completely. It's funny because a lot of the time someone won't even notice that you did that, but you'll be sitting there thinking how stupid you are, how you feel, and you're the only one thinking that.
And now it's awesome because I have a blog, so I can write about all the crazy stuff and kind of have a laugh about it, where years ago I'd be like, all right, I'm never telling anyone about this.
Right. Well, one thing that stood out to me on your site is where you talk about going out alone. That's something I encourage people to do. It's something I've spent a decent amount of time doing, especially for people that live in remote areas. They don't have friends to go out with, or they just moved to a new city. What sort of advice can you give to a guy that wants to do that?
You know, and it's funny because one of the things I love so much about social skills, charisma, is like when you're talking one-on-one with someone and you say like, have you considered going out alone? And they'll just kind of freeze and say like, I don't think I would ever do that. Or you get the other side of the coin where someone's like, yeah, I could totally do that. And when you follow up with them, they got too scared and they went home like right as they got to the bar. I think the best thing to do, and this is something that I used to do back when I was single, I'm married now. I would go to a bar just with a book and I would hang out on a couch, read a book for a little bit after making conversation with the doorman and, you know, the hostess or whoever. And I mean, a lot of times people would just like sit down next to me and ask me what book I was reading. Cause I remember sometimes I would actually want to read the book, but I couldn't because people would keep approaching me and saying like, hey, what are you reading there? And it's always, I think it's crucial to do something that makes you comfortable first. So for some people that might be reading a book, for some people that might be, going to watch a game. And if you can start those low stakes conversations with people around you, no one cares that you're there alone. People have this irrational fear that everyone's looking at them. Something called the spotlight effect is something that we all suffer from. It's a cognitive distortion that makes us hyper aware of what other people might think of us. And in reality, everyone's so wrapped up in their own heads that they're not really paying attention to you either.
Totally.
So my challenge would be like, if you're not sure if you can if you can go out alone, if that just seems like a concept that kind of like you get that knot in your stomach and you think like, oh, I don't know if I could do that. Maybe just try this, like go out on like a Tuesday night and say, you know what, I'm only going to go for 30 minutes. Cap that downside where, you know, like in 30 minutes, I'll be going home. I can always stay later if I want to, but I don't have to. And then when you get much like jumping into a cold pool, once you jump around and start splashing around, you realize that you start having fun. And so, you know, 30 minutes was 2 hours ago and you're talking to someone, that might make it a little easier for someone who is a little nervous about going out by themselves.
I like that. Bring out a book, something I hadn't considered before. And once you're out, and I'm guessing you were going to kind of get into this, you know, with the lessons that you were planning on going over as well. But any tricks or hacks just to start those cold conversations up or ways to connect quickly? I remember Dan took me through a model he had where he talked about the four stages of any conversation, where I think you start with cliches and you go to facts and you go to feeling or opinions and then feelings, which I really liked a lot, because the way my brain works is I like to see things in kind of like a flow chart or a format. And I don't know if your brain works like that, but if you have anything around that question.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I think number one, the number one rule of being charismatic, make yourself comfortable first. And so what that might mean is you just start, like, if we're building off the same concept of you've been having tiny conversations throughout your day. Well, when you get to the bar, you're there alone. It's 6 p.m. You just got off work. You're only going to stay for 30 minutes. Let's paint the picture here. How could you start conversations with people around you? Well, I always go to the environment first. So the shared environment that you're in, maybe there's someone playing covers of Coldplay songs in the corner, but he's not very good at it, or whatever it might be. There's a game on TV. There's someone sitting next to you. Like, keep that ball rolling. So if you can start small conversations with those people, something concerning the environment, like, hey, do you know what drink is on special tonight? Or what do you think of this guy over here playing songs? Like, something small that you can keep that ball rolling with, and then that might develop into a longer conversation. So the environment, or what a person's doing or wearing. So if there's a game of pool going on, and I'm just riffing right now.
Totally.
If there's a game of pool going on and someone hits an amazing trick shot, like clinks, you know, you just toast them and be like, that was awesome. And then boom, you've got a conversation started. A rule that I advise my clients to keep in mind is, if you're coming into a conversation, especially a group conversation, because that can be a little bit more tricky, you want to equal the group's energy or higher. So I call it the 10% rule. You want to be 10% higher than the group's kind of vibe, because no one ever said to themselves like, oh, we're having so much fun, I wish someone would bring us down. That's something right. That has never been said by any human ever. So keep in mind things that you might avoid. You might avoid talking about, I'm just thinking politics, how you had to put your dog to sleep yesterday. Like, you might want to sidestep those, because people, when they're out, they're generally out to just have a good time and maybe forget the work week. So good things to keep in mind to help you become more effective in those conversations. Keep it light, keep it fun. What I advise my readers to do as well is skim the news. I don't read the news very much at all. I intentionally block sites for myself to keep myself more focused. But if I'm going out, I might just skim the trending stories. So I have kind of a grab bag of things that if I need to pull out in the middle, I can, like, hey, did you see this crazy thing Kanye did? And then you can just kind of roll with that, because that's a conversational starter as well.
Totally. And if there's something really huge that happened in the news and you don't know about it, then you might look really stupid if you're just completely clueless.
You might look really stupid. I actually use it because I'm super selectively ignorant. I intentionally avoid like most news that I possibly can. So if someone brings up something, I'm like, I haven't heard of this, can you explain it to me? And then boom, I've got them riffing on you know, the election or whoever is doing this thing, because I haven't heard about any of this. And so they actually get to learn me something, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. I'm the same as you. I don't really follow the news much at all because I find most of it to be irrelevant to my life or just downers. You know, just a lot of fluff. One thing I'll do
is a lot of kind of battling for people's attention and stuff like that. But I do want to call out as well, like, you just planted a seed in my brain, so I'm going to go with something real quick. Mm-hmm. Thinking about, like, there are two ways to view every situation. So there's, I don't know if you've read up on the locus of control. I'm a big fan of having an internal locus of control, which means that I have a lot of influence over the outcome of my, like, life and situations and stuff. Some people have an external locus of control where they think, like, the world is doing stuff to them. How can we apply that to social situations? So in any situation, there are two sides of the coin. So you can frame things as, like, oh, I didn't tell a good joke, or I, you know, didn't know what was going on and I look like a doofus, and that's what you can tell yourself. Or you can flip it around and say, like, yeah, you know what, how can I capitalize on this? How can I use this as a springboard to, you know, either build rapport with someone or have a deeper connection with someone because they're teaching me something or they're learning me something. There's a really good podcaster by the name of Stephen Dubner. He's done Freakonomics for years, and I was listening to a podcast with him, and he said, and I love this line, and I'm stealing it, so you guys can steal it from me, because it's not even mine to give you. If someone's introducing, like, and they're saying, like, this is what I do for work or whatever, you can say, tell me something I don't know about XYZ. And that circumvents, like, the boring, like, automatic response and goes deeper and saying, like, well, what might this person not know about splicing monkey genes into frogs or whatever it might be?
Yeah, I like that. Gives them an opportunity to teach you something. Everyone loves the opportunity to be a lot of people love the opportunity to be an expert or to show some sort of intelligence on different topics, that's for sure. And to circle back a little bit, I really like what you said earlier about making sure that you feel comfortable first when you're in an environment. And that's definitely a problem for a lot of my listeners, especially guys who are just getting into this stuff. You know, they'll be out in an environment, or, you know, I'll be encouraging them to talk to girls during the day or start up conversations, but they won't feel comfortable. And then that energy just comes right off, and doesn't matter what they say, the other person feels uncomfortable, and that train wrecks the interaction. I may not train wreck it, but they're left feeling like they screwed it up or it was a slightly awkward. So do you have any other things that people can do to make themselves more comfortable when out, especially when they're not warmed up?
It actually can be a lot of things. You want to look at it from the lens of almost every situation, there's a lot of variables that you have control over. So even if it's just like, say you look amazing in this one shirt and you look, and you're really comfortable in this one shirt, get five of them and wear that, and that's your uniform. Not only do you have less decisions to make throughout the week because you're not focusing on what should I wear, how do I look, you've got something that you look good in that's not an affliction shirt, and you feel good in, and that is another way to make you comfortable. Maybe, like, something that I'm a big proponent of, well, not anymore because I'm married, but back when I was single, was I would have sort of a first date routine that I took dates on. And I lived downtown at the time, so I could go to just select number of places that I was super comfortable. I knew the staff there. I had a good relationship with people, and it made me very comfortable. And it also just, it took up less of my processing power so that I could focus on a great experience for her and a great shared experience for us. Rather than thinking like, oh, I'm going to this new place. What if I don't know where to park? And, you know, all this stuff that you can largely offload if you just go to a place a few times before and then maybe the third time you go, like, boom, it's really comfortable because it's now your spot, and you've worked to make small talk with the staff, or you've had a few dates there, and you know that the one vending machine, I don't know why there's a vending machine in this spot, but like, it always malfunctions, like, so use this one. Like, you get to know the lay of the land, you get to be a local. And even if there's something in the moment, like, say that you're on a date and you're downstairs at a bar and just the vibe isn't good. It's kind of like, it's a little too comfortable. Like, there's this big comfy couch and like, she just seems distracted. Well, you might want to move locations. You might want to actually say, like, hey, there's this really cool spot a couple of doors over. Let's go there. And you might want to actually shift the location, because that might be the next step and the better step for you both to provide that amazing experience.
Totally. Yeah, I love what you're saying, because I have what I call the first date protocol that I teach all my clients, and you're describing it to a T. You already have the protocol in your mind. The step one is eliminate variables. So go places you know, with people you know, stick to the same venues, know where you're going for the first, the second, the third. And then once you're there, you know, if the conversation gets stale, move to a different energy. And so I love how you describe that.
And I haven't heard of this before, so I am psychic, though, so that probably helps.
Well, that's easy, but, yeah.
But it's so true. Like, if there are guys listening and they're struggling with, like, yeah, it seems like, you know, halfway through the date we just lose momentum. Well, have that confidence to call an audible and say, like, we should go here, we should do this. Like, always have at least one contingency plan. For like, if this, then that. So if this place isn't good tonight, or there's just a band there that's way too loud for a more close conversation, then we go here. So I think it's great to, you don't have to like plan it out to a T, because then if you over prepare and you're too stuck with that, then you can't be adaptable in the moment. But if you can kind of flex and be dynamic with that situation, like, she's going to appreciate that, and it'll be a really good date.
One question I have that's it's a little bit tough to ask, but one thing that makes the area of dating kind of easy for guys to tackle is there's an obvious kind of outcome, as you know, as you're moving through becoming better at dating and being able to connect with women more, you know, it's easy to track, like, how many numbers are you getting or how many dates are you going on, and so on and so forth. But with becoming more compelling, it's more broad, it's more abstract. So how do you work with your clients in a way to, you know, give them some sort of benchmarks to hit, or what do you have them track? Because one thing that can be really detrimental for guys in the dating space is they get too hung up on the results, and they get too hung up on, ooh, did I get her number, or does she like me? And then that ruins their whole conversation. Mm-hmm. Whereas with yours, it's more about yourself and not about that external. But at the same time, it's really helpful to have some things to measure. So is there anything that comes to mind for that?
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic point, because I could absolutely relate to, like, oh, I didn't get a number, fail. Like, it's very binary.
Yeah.
It's like one, yes, two, no. Like, the less outcome dependent you can be, and it sounds so counterintuitive, but probably some of your more advanced students would agree. The less outcome dependent you are in general, the more fun you have during this process. And I think the secret sauce is really keying in on saying, like, okay, if this is a skill that you want to improve, say it's being able to, you know, build relationships at work. So how might you measure that? Well, you might measure that in the number of conversations you've had throughout the week, but you also might measure it in how many of these people I talked to. Say I talked to 25 people and, you know, had kind of a little bit of a deeper conversation. How many of these people actually circle back with me and they revisit me and we have a follow-up discussion about whatever it might be, a project, competency that they're working on, or something like that. If we can measure like the results in that way, that's extremely helpful. Even if, and I think this is something that draws a parallel to dating, even if a situation doesn't go how we planned, or it ends up not being ideal, well, the only failure there is if you don't learn. So if you can actually, if you can take something away from that, if you can say like, well, you know what, this situation didn't work, but here's what I learned out of that, and here's what I'll do differently next time. If you can debrief that situation and kind of fix it for the future, then that failure wasn't a failure at all. It was a success.
Yeah, I agree.
It's like, if there's one thing I could totally, like, you know, command B and bold for your readers, it would be like, yeah, it's great to keep an eye on those, like, how many numbers are you getting in a week? How many dates are you getting in a week? But also definitely take stock of, like, how did it feel? Like, is it getting easier? Is it getting more difficult? Am I enjoying myself? Because those are kind of the intangibles that it's important to, so even if you can't track a binary number, if you can just track like the feeling or the mood, then you're going to have a better time and you're going to have better experiences with these women that you're going on dates with.
Yeah, track it from 1 to 10 or something like that in terms of how you feel. That can be a good one too.
And listen, I'm a big data person. Like, I enjoy data. I'm a baseball fan, so I like batting averages and home runs and hits and like sabermetrics. Like, yeah, cool. Sign me up for all that. And it can be more difficult to track with social skills, but it's when you look at all the areas of impact. Because if you learn to get good with women, well, and guess what? You're probably building the skill of being able to build rapport with a diverse set of people. You can apply that to your job. You can apply that, like, if you're founding a startup. I guarantee you that people aren't going to give venture funding to someone that they don't like. It's if you're having pitches for appearing on media outlets, guess what? You're going to have to build rapport, and there's skills that go into that, like doing research and really digging deep into who that person is. Like, I can tell because you've read stuff on my site, so I feel like, hey, this guy really knows me. That makes me very comfortable. Mm-hmm. So there's spillover skills that impact a lot of different areas, not just related to dating.
Totally, yeah. Before I go to the next question, you mentioned earlier that there were some key points that you wanted to touch on. Did we cover those yet? Or I wanted to make sure
we have. I do want to, and you know, it's funny, like, in my notes here, I have a first date routine. We already took care of that, so that's great. But also, I wanted to cover how do you think about topics when they come up in conversations? Say that you don't have a whole lot in common with any given topic. How can you think around that topic so you never run out of things to say in conversation? There's something I teach called spokes, and when I think of a conversational topic, I imagine a bicycle wheel, and the current topic would be the hub. So if we're thinking about a random topic, like, let's say superhero movies. So say superhero movies is the hub. What are the spokes radiating out from that hub that you can also talk about? Well, you can also talk about superpowers that you want, movies coming out soon, favorite actors. When I think of favorite actors, I think of Bill Murray. And then I think of Zombieland, and I think of what weapons I might want in a zombie apocalypse. And so there's a lot of different areas that I can go to from any conversation in almost any topic. Even if it's like marine biology, which I'm making it hard on myself because I have never thought of marine biology until this moment. So I would think of SeaWorld. I would think of Finding Dory. There's always ways to think around a topic. So you always have something to connect with someone about, even if it's not something that you fully understand in the moment.
I like that, the spoke analogy. That it's very easy to see where you can take a conversation if you're not just focused on what's going on right then and there, and if you're worried about it. Another thing, when, you know, if you're thinking about the spokes, how do you juggle that with also staying present and really listening to what's going on versus getting ahead of yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. Because if you're too focused and you're too locked in on a particular topic, And you're like, okay, I hope I get to talk about whatever it is. And then you don't. Guess what? You're, especially if you're in a one-on-one conversation, that ship has sailed, and now you're kind of caught flat-footed, and you have to kind of recover and play from behind. So what can you do? Well, I also teach my clients, like, topics are like trains. There's always another one coming. So I almost envision it like, and it's a takeoff of the Warren Buffett quote that's like, businesses are like buses. There's always another one coming.
I haven't heard either, but I like a bus.
And so say that you really want to talk about superhero movies, and you have like the perfect thing, and it will feel so good to throw this in there. You know, it'll be perfect. But then the conversation, let's say you're in a group, that conversation shifts, and then, oh no, you're left holding the bag. So keep playing the spokes game with whatever new topic comes up. So maybe the conversation shifts to, help me out, Robbie, give me something. Anything random.
Mirrors.
Mirrors. Okay. Whoa, I don't think it can get any more random than that. So if it's mirrors, we're just going to play this game and roll with it. So if it's mirrors, my spokes for mirrors would be shopping at Home Depot. Really like super fancy mirrors with like amazing borders. See, I don't even know what they're called. Mirrors in dressing rooms. Oh man, the mirror game where when you look at two mirrors and there's like a hallway that loops around and what's beyond the loop, I don't know. Maybe it's another dimension. Who knows? Right. So there's always things that you can talk about. And I think the less, again, we kind of go back to this, the less outcome dependent you are on a specific topic, a specific girl, a specific situation, the more effective you're going to be, because you're sort of holding that basketball. Listen, I don't play basketball. I'm 5'7", maybe even 5'6".
Well, I play hockey. I usually give that analogy, but people don't get it because there's not enough hockey players out there.
So maybe like hockey then. Maybe yeah. Like if you grip too tightly on the stick, I'm sure that's a bad thing. I'm sure you need to like have the right balance where you can be adaptable to the situation.
Right.
I love watching hockey highlights, especially in slow motion. That way I can actually follow the puck, because when I watch it on TV, and I wish I was a hockey fan. I think it's awesome that they get in fights and no one gets arrested. But I just can't follow the puck, and it's like, oh, what happened? Oh, he scored. Oh, the game's over. What happened?
Don't feel bad. I can't follow it either. And I play, and I'm pretty good at it too. So that's
I'm not the only one.
Yeah. If you're actually at the game, you can follow it, but on TV it's almost impossible. And they've tried all those silly, you know, having the halo and the red flash behind the puck, it doesn't matter. But if you know hockey, you kind of get an idea of where they have it and where. But anyways, we're getting off topic. But went from mirrors to hockey pucks with red flashes.
I feel like if Elon Musk is going to go to Mars, then we need to have something that follows a puck on the ice.
You know what? That's I couldn't agree with you more.
Maybe if the whole Mars thing doesn't work out, maybe he can just do the puck.
I feel like he should be able to figure it out. If someone could, it'd be him. Or maybe just have all the games in slow-mo. That could be better, too.
Mm. See, I would love that. We digress.
No, totally. That's. But thank you for answering that in terms of the spokes and staying present. And I could tell when you were answering it, you know, you come across to me, just we're very similar in the fact that we both had so many conversations. It's so easy to jump from one to the other. And I feel like guys will get, you know, they'll just get hung up and they'll start doubting themselves and they'll walk away. And this is one thing I see time in and time out is, you know, something will happen in a conversation where the guy will stall out and he'll get really nervous and he'll just walk away.
Mm.
And I would guess that a big majority of those times he was doing fine and the girl was enjoying the conversation, and he basically pulled the ripcord way too early because he didn't know what he was going to say next. And,
just kind of like stiffly, like rotated around and checked his phone and then teeter tottered off.
Yeah.
Look, we've all been there at some point in our lives. Like, let's be honest. Like, I know I have. I don't know about you, Robbie, but I'm sure that we've all had those situations.
Yep.
And after a certain point, you get to a point where the silence takes on a different form. And correct me if you have had a different experience than me, but because I remember moments where, you know, I think like, okay, silence, well, it's time for me to go, and then just kind of teeter-tottered off. Whereas like years later, it would be like, okay, silence is good. Silence is fine. I am comfortable with silence. And then she might start the conversation again, and then boom, it's time to play.
Exactly. And the best thing is when you get really comfortable with silence, you can use it to your advantage, and you can just stay silent and you can look at her. And if she doesn't say anything, you could be like, well, and keep looking at her. And now all of a sudden she's on the spot, and it has a really interesting kind of power dynamic to it, where if at any point she felt like, you know, you were doing everything to drive the conversation, she was just fielding questions, if you just sit there and let it be silent, not get awkward or uncomfortable, and flip it on her, now she's going to start investing in the conversation, and anything you invest in, you have, you know, a vested interest in, and she'll take more interest in you because you're willing to kind of sit in that tension.
Yeah. And, you know, it's so funny that you say that, because really, when I look at dating, I just remember thinking a lot about like, how can I, how can it feel playful? Because I think so many guys like, I would have fallen into this category, you know, 8-9 years ago. You know, we put so much importance on what happens in that situation, where if we can kind of loosen our metaphorical grip on the hockey stick, then we can just play and have fun just like we were on the playground, where we might just, you know, yawn and look at our watch and say like, okay, well, I'm ready for your next joke or something like that, and just be totally playful, because it's a different dynamic than almost anything else in life, because you're not gonna say these things at a meeting with senior executives in the boardroom. Like, it's a totally different dynamic. So anything you can do to lighten the humor, like I always recommend that, especially for my clients that want to cultivate their humor, because humor is such a difficult thing to teach. Watch a lot of stand-up. Like, take a dump truck, fill it with YouTube clips of Louis C.K. and Daniel Tosh or whoever, and watch all of it. See, let that seep into your bones, and then like, you're going to get funny. I promise you that. It'll just take time, because humor, and I would love to hear your thoughts on this, Robbie, like if you have any clients that you've taught, like humor is such a subjective thing, and it can be a difficult thing to teach. But I think just being exposed to it helps you cultivate that, and like being able to make people laugh and kind of play with that tension, because at the end of the day, humor is just making and breaking of tension. Like if you look at Steve Martin and how he would not finish jokes, he just took the tension and never let it go. And it was hilarious and revolutionary. I would love to get your thoughts on humor.
Yeah, I agree completely with it. It's very hard to teach. It's very abstract, because everyone has their different style of humor. Some people are dry, some people are slapstick, you know, and everything in between. Some people are funny just in their mannerisms, or exaggerating, or mimicking people. And so everyone's funny in their own way, but everyone's funny when they're being authentic, I believe. You know, because there's always the human condition is funny, right? There's something funny about being human. You know, when you're sitting on the couch and you just rip a fart, that's funny to me. It's not funny to everyone, but it's funny to me.
it's funny to me. I mean, I've watched enough South Park.
Right. So, you know, anytime you're trying to be funny, usually you're going to fail. But teaching a guy to be funny, I agree with, I love the idea of just, you know, watch a ton of stand-up. Comedians are amazing because they really understand timing. And if you don't have good timing, none of your jokes, none of anything you're going to say is really going to be funny, because you're going to rush it. You're going to kill that tension, as you mentioned. So timing is huge.
I feel like here's like a cheat, a hack that is almost unfair. Like, it really is. Whoever's listening to this right now, you're welcome, because this is gonna be awesome if you're not already doing it. So just watch a lot of stand-up, watch a lot of funny movies, and just steal the lines verbatim. Like, apply it to what seems like the right situation, and then pull out the line. And like, if someone's like, oh, that's funny because that's from that thing, well, guess what? You guys have just bonded. And if they don't know it, well, you take all the credit. You just like seem like you're the awesome, really funny person.
Totally.
So it's a win-win. Like, there's no way to lose and two ways to win, which is my favorite kind of game to play.
Yeah, watch Adam Sandler movies, Ben Stiller movies. What's his face? The kind of fat guy from Irvine in Old School.
You mean Will Ferrell?
Will Ferrell, yeah. Those guys
the
have
kind of fat guy.
Yeah. That's probably the worst explanation you could have possibly given, but you know, when you think funny, a lot of people think Will Ferrell.
But, and like I was just listening, getting psyched up for this podcast, I was listening to Kanye Jay-Z song, and it had Will Ferrell, and it's like, it's provocative, no one knows what it means. And I was like, how can I work this into this podcast, because I would love that, and I just did.
You just did it.
I'm super excited.
Killed it. Well, you can derelict my balls.
I haven't seen Zoolander 2. I don't know if it's any good. I just prefer to let the original live in the best like light possible.
I haven't seen it either.
But I actually wanted to pick your brain, kind of doing a left turn back to the podcast, or right turn. I can't ever remember which. So I'm curious, like if you were to think about like the top one or two questions that you see most often from your leaders, I was going to put you on the spot and just see if you want to rapid fire them to me, and then I float out some knowledge.
Most common questions from who?
From your
from my readers, yeah.
Your readers.
Okay. How do I keep the conversation going? We kind of covered that.
Okay.
Is there anything else you wanted to add? I mean, I think you nailed it with the spokes, but
yeah, I think there's enough content there where they are going to be able to start using that immediately. Like as soon as you click pause on this podcast and you see that person you want to talk to, start trying it right now. I challenge you.
What if I think I'm boring and I have nothing good to talk about?
That is, you know, it's funny because I've definitely heard the same thing from my readers too. And the reality is like everyone is interesting. Even if you think you aren't, you are. And the difference is people that are interesting, I think that there are just a couple of things that they do that separate them from the pack. I think one thing that they do is they just keep track of either in their mind, or I know some people, myself included, that actually write stuff down in a list of like stories to tell. And they keep track of interesting things that have happened to them, and they actually continue to test and refine. So say you start a story of like, hey, I went to the dog park with this dog that I was babysitting, and the dog just took a huge dump in the middle of the dog park, and then like all the dogs started running. Like they might, and I'm making this up, by the way, this didn't really happen last week on Tuesday. if you test and refine the stories, like pay attention to the reactions that you're getting from these stories. If they fall flat, scrap it. If you start to get a good reaction at a certain point, continue. And then guess what? You're sharpening the skill of telling this story over and over and over. Like on my podcast, I actually had on Marsha Shandour, who's the storytelling coach for the World Domination Summit. And that's episode 4 of my podcast. And she has a good methodology when she thinks about stories, and that you're creating movies inside someone's head. And so if you can refine those stories, and that might mean just doing a little due diligence and keeping track of stories and refining those stories, then you can create like an Oscar-winning movie inside someone's head.
Yeah, storytelling is huge. I think that's maybe the number one skill to being a great conversationalist. Maybe not, but being a storyteller, knowing how to tell a story, and great storytellers, they tell the same stories pretty much day in and day out. You know, they might have 10 or 12 stories, and so all my friends who are great storytellers, once they launch into the story, I look at them and I roll my eyes because I'm like, oh, I know why he's telling the story. I know exactly where, you know, where he's going with this. And, you know, but
you still listen, don't you?
Of course.
Yeah.
They're still funny. And then we make fun of the fact that I knew you were going to tell that story then. I know. And I knew when I looked at you, you could tell that I was going to.
And, you know, I have a friend named Tim, and he's an awesome guy. And he used to tell the story where he was flying home to see his parents for Thanksgiving. He calls it Timsgiving because his birthday is on the 27th. And he was flying home, and he's deathly afraid of heights, from what I can remember. So he's flying home, and then like the plane starts shuddering, and he's kind of looking around. You know, his palms are getting a little sweaty. He kind of feels a knot in his stomach, and then suddenly the lights go out, and then it starts shaking violently, and then like he's gripping the armrest as tight as he can. And all he can hear is this little girl screaming, and she's shrieking and shrieking and shrieking, and the lights come on, and everyone's looking at him. He was screaming, and it was his voice. And I've heard him tell that story, you know, dozens of times, but I stop what I'm doing every time. I'm like, I have to hear the story again because it's awesome.
Totally.
Because it's got that unexpected left-hand turn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, threw me in the loop for a second.
And kind of part two, So one is storytelling. Two is I think it's important to develop the skill of not being mean to yourself.
Yeah.
I wish there should be another way to phrase it, but it's true. Like I see so many people that just walk around with this like almost cloud of like, I'm not good enough. I can't do this because whatever. Pay attention to those stories you tell yourself, because much like grooves in a record, the more they go around, the more ingrained that story you tell yourself gets, and the more difficult it is to rewrite that story. And the stories we tell ourselves, those like myths that we give our own lives, they're the invisible hand that guides our lives over like months, years, decades. So it's really important. Key in on your self-talk. And if you are saying like, oh, I'm just a boring person, guess what? You're making yourself a boring person. Immediately stop that self-talk and just replace it with, sometimes I'm a boring person. Sometimes you just need a little like maybe or a sometimes to not make it an absolute. And then from there, you want to get to a point where you're like, you know what? I'm a pretty good storyteller. And you work on that self-talk. I think that's one of the most pervasive things that I've seen when it comes to just like people's assessment of their own social skills or their own charisma, is that they're really, really fucking like hard on themselves.
Yeah. They're their own worst enemies, and it's brutal how hard people can be on themselves, which is, everyone's interesting. As you said, everyone has cool shit about them, and it's just a bullshit belief if they're not. So I like that to, you know, listen to the stories you tell yourself and then become a good storyteller as well. And just don't believe the stories you tell yourself unless they're empowering.
We all kind of lie to ourselves most of the time, almost about everything, but that's maybe something for a different podcast. Like we all have movies playing in our own heads, and it's our way to make sense of the world. So it's really important that we're intentional about what movie we're playing.
Well, real quick, there's a question that the guys posted in the group, and I want to ask this for the guys on the call as well. I'll take you guys off mute. If anyone has a question, feel free to ask. Usually guys are shy until there'll be a period of awkwardness. So to replace the awkwardness, I'll ask a question from Jay, who posted it in the Leverage group. He said, this may or not be covered in Jeff's material, but I couldn't tell from looking at the site. He says, is it more advantageous to have an opinion about everything, or should you just know about a lot of things and have strong opinions on a few select things that you actually care about? So that's the first question. And the next one is, how often should you be polarizing? So these are a little off topic, but anything you want to add on that?
So the first one is, should you have strong opinions about a select few things, or just have sort of basic opinions about a lot of different things?
Yeah.
So I think, you know what? I think that a sign of a confident person is that they may have strong opinions about some things, but they're always open-minded enough to be convinced. Like, so if Robbie comes to me and he says, like, you know what, I got this new opinion on shirts with the words affliction on them, and if he's persuasive about that, like, and he makes good points, like, I need to be strong enough to say, like, you know what, I was wrong about that. Let's all take our affliction shirts out of the trash, wipe the soot off, and put them on. And you know, I see all the time where people get really, really tied into their opinions on specific topics, and there's this psychological concept called commitment consistency, where we have a need to be consistent with our thoughts and opinions and actions. And I would actually challenge that person to say, like, you know, you might have some core things that you're really passionate about, and it's okay to have really strong convictions there, but be adaptable. And if nothing else, even if you don't agree with your conversational partner, be empathetic enough to see the world through their eyes, if only for a moment. And that's going to help you connect with that person, because ultimately that's what you want. It's not so much about the opinion, it's about your ability to connect with another person. And no one ever connected with someone who just completely was like, oh yeah, that opinion's dumb.
Totally. Yeah. There's nothing more annoying than someone who's just really dismissive and judgmental of a question or just of an opinion.
Immediately I draw up the drawbridge and I'm like, ah, fuck that guy.
Yeah.
Whatever he says, I don't care. So Robbie, what was the second question?
Second question was, how often should you be polarizing?
I think that I think this kind of dovetails nicely with the having strong opinions. So, you know, there's a saying where not everyone's going to like you, and that's fine. As long as you're being authentic to your core values. So if your core values are like, you know, be nice to people and don't be a dick, it's okay to have strong opinions there. And if some people are like, you know what, you need to have really strong opinions and you need to piss some people off, well, if that goes against who you are, then you can ignore that advice. I don't think it's, you know, it's one of those things where I think I would need more information from the question person, but you shouldn't aim to be polarizing. If you are polarizing on some issues, that's fine, but don't set out being a chronic disagreeer. Like, I had a friend who whenever he was coming to hang out, kind of a pall would cast over the group and was saying, oh great, you know, that guy's coming. Because you could agree with him and he would still disagree with you. And we actually had a mutual friend who pulled him aside, was like, look, before you respond, I want you to stop and think for 30 seconds and then respond.
And he still disagreed with him?
Actually, the one time.
Oh wow.
That stopped his behavior. And so he actually was like, he just shook the other guy's hand after that and was like, I understand now.
Oh, good for him. I was about to say fuck that guy, but good for him.
Normally I would, but when you think about the ripple effects that what you do, like, that ripple effect happens in your career, your dating life, and your social life with your friends. So if you're the guy who's always opinionated and is always polarizing, you know what? You're alienating half of the people probably. If you're leading with being an empathetic person, then guess what? People are going to enjoy being around you because at least you're making a very solid effort to connect with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Real quick, let's see if any of the guys on there have any questions.
Okay, you know how you were talking about the spokes thing? All of that is good and fine, but what do you do if there's no wheel?
Can you explain a little bit more?
So in other words, you approach a girl, right? So we have this protocol when we approach girls in the daytime. And a lot of times, after we basically assert our intention with them, I got nothing to say. And so one of the things I guess we can say is, I got nothing. But basically, if they're there, and they're at least standing there, but they're not giving you anything, do you have any kind of special technique or way of thinking about it or anything like that to handle that better than, you know, the normal way we might handle it?
So I'm actually going to, I'm going to challenge you a little bit. So let's place ourselves in a situation. What's a typical situation that you have when you're approaching women in the daytime?
What I normally do, right, and this is the protocol that Robbie taught me, was go up to the girl and say, hey, right, you point somewhere so that you get their attention, you look them in the eye, and you say what basically just happened, which is usually I saw you walking by, and I had to risk embarrassing myself to come and flirt with you. And then you stand there and, you know, I introduce myself and I say my name. And then if something comes up, I have an idea of something, then something's there. If something doesn't, then something's not there. And that's when I usually bail, actually.
Okay. So let's think about this from the perspective of the girl. And I think that's one of the most valuable skills that you can cultivate when it comes to approaching women, is be very cognizant of what might be running through their mind. So probably first they're wondering, are you a threat? That's probably the top thing in their mind. Number two, they're probably like, is he going to monopolize all my time? And number three, is he interesting, or do I have to just get to where I'm going? So, let me ask you this: Do you typically have a think about when a conversation's going well? For example, do you use any sort of conversational sparks where you're talking about like the environment that you're in, or something that she's doing or wearing, anything like that?
Well, I think about those things, and when it's funny because when I'm not in the flow of it, that's when I'm aware of it. And the times that it's worked so far, in other words, the time that I've actually made a connection or engaged in some conversation, it's actually like I don't even need to think about any of those things because she's already providing contributions enough to give some momentum. It's when she's not providing any of those, and then I'm just like, it's kind of like a downward spiral in terms of momentum for me.
Yeah. I don't know if
one thing let me add in there too, because I love what Jeff said about, I was actually just doing a session with Amish and Maddie where I called them out for saying, you need to remember that you have to think about what she's thinking. And it's usually something about her safety or where she's going or how much time she has to get there, especially when she's about her day. And I'm curious, are a part of that protocol, the follow-up after you introduce yourself is to ask that same question that I almost always ask, is where are you coming from and where are you going? It's a double question, but I like to ask it, hey, so where are you coming from, where are you going? Which then gives you a lot of information about how in a rush she is, what she's actually doing, and then you can gauge from there. So I'm curious, because that's essentially what Jeff alluded to. Are you getting into that at all?
It's that is never actually hooked properly, for lack of a better way to say it. It's just, it seemed like so much of a mouthful. So I've tried to do different things, but when I do exactly that, they usually run into it with their words, or it's like I haven't gotten enough of their attention, so they're not present enough to hear the entire utterance, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, well, it's just a guideline. You could ask it however you want. That's how I like to ask it. But anyways, I just want to throw that in and let Jeff continue with his line of questioning, because I wanted to see where that was going.
If I can interject one more thing just real quick. If it helps this discussion to make it more concrete, I can think of a particular example so I can add in some more concrete details if you want.
Let's do it. Yeah, I do.
That usually helps.
Okay, this is cool because actually, like, I don't even understand this reaction. But basically, there's one girl I approached a couple weeks ago where I did the typical approach protocol. And So my only reaction that I get is she's giggling and she's kind of stepping backward. So that's where it was, and it didn't go much farther than that. So that's the context.
Yeah. So typically when people laugh, that's actually a sign of breaking tension. So you cause some tension in the situation, and she's giggling and stepping back, both to reclaim her personal space, but then also to break tension, because in her mind, she's probably thinking, like, what does this guy want from me? Nothing against you, because I'm sure you're a wonderful guy. I like you already. And it's just a biological reaction to the situation. So just thinking about, like, a couple of things that I would recommend personally, like, and I assume you're mostly approaching attractive women during the day. So what would it be like if you tried out this protocol with everyone for one day? That means the doorman, the person standing in line at Starbucks next to you, the guy that you don't know very well at work, like who's walking somewhere. Like, there are so many other opportunities, so you can get a baseline of kind of responses. And so you'll actually be able to play off those responses more effectively in the future, and you'll actually build the muscle memory, the skill of this protocol, and you'll have it in a wide variety of situations. If I'm thinking about it like a car, I'm thinking of like the McLaren F1. It's only, you know, it's got soft tires. It's only built for the racetrack. But then you've got like the Jeep, you know, the 4x4 with like tires that look like Lego tires that can go over everything. So being adaptable and almost being anti-fragile to different situations, I think if you just, I would challenge you for one day to actually try out this protocol with everyone during the normal course of your day, and not just approach that cute girl who's on her way to the subway, but approach as many people that are just in normal proximity. Don't go out of your way. Don't run across you know, Madison Square Park or whatever to the guy playing chess. Like, don't do that. But try that out for a day, and I would be curious to see what you'll learn about the protocol and about yourself, because you'll start to probably experience some like internal blockers. And the more conversations you have, you'll notice that those seem to kind of gently fade away.
Yeah, I'm experiencing, I love that advice too. Thinking about it.
Yeah, I love that advice. And Nick, you can adapt the protocol. I'm sure you can see how you could do that, right, Ara?
Yeah, that's very challenging for me to think about, and it probably would be good for me to do. And it's funny because I've actually narrowed my selection over time, at least over the past 6 months, because I think if it's not someone I'm genuinely attracted to, I don't come across as real. But that notwithstanding, it's probably good for me to do that.
Yeah, because it's about being more social.
And I'm going to challenge you. I want you to try this in the next few days, and I want you to email me personally, jeff@becomemorecompelling.com. And okay, I want to follow up with you. I want to see how this is working. Say again. I'm sorry.
Oh, shit. Now we have a social contract.
It's a social contract. I just shook my cat's hand, which I'm going to use for your hand. So whether you know it or not, you're committed. Because what we want to do is nudge your intent from there's a beautiful woman to I just do this with everyone, so it's a natural part of my operating system. That's where we want to get to.
I love it.
I get it.
On that note, I think that's a great place to leave off. But Jeff, how do my listeners find out more about you? Where can they go to find your stuff? So on and so forth.
Absolutely. So I'd actually like to extend, if I may, a gift to your wonderful readers. I have a ultimate guide to joining and enjoying group conversations. And if you just go to, and I believe this link is going to be given to you guys, but I'll state it here. If you guys will go to becomemorecompelling.com/leverage, that's becomemorecompelling.com/leverage. And enter your email, and I'm going to give you my ultimate guide to group conversations, where you'll learn everything from like myths, like you don't have to be loud and interrupt people to be successful in a group, to word-for-word scripts, to like you don't have to carry the conversations. And there's going to be a lot of valuable information there so that you can thrive not only in group conversations, but you'll eventually thrive in one-to-one conversations, which it sounds like that's probably what a lot of you guys do at this point. But it's going to impact a lot of different areas of your life. And I'm super excited. This is a lot of fun. And again, if anyone wants to try out that challenge I gave just a second ago, you can email me personally at jeff@becomemorecompelling.com. And let's just try it as an experiment. And I'll shake my cat's hand as much as I need to enter in social contracts with everyone on this call if I need to.
I'll shake Wiley's hand too. He's lying right next to me. Just in case you didn't shake them all, I've got the rest of them. Hear that, Wiley? Got it. All right.
Well, great, Jeff. Thank you so much for coming on. I've really enjoyed our conversation. And dude, so many just awesome things and great advice. And I feel like we're on the same wavelength with a lot of this stuff.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure. See you guys.
Thanks for listening. If you want more, go to innerconfidence.com and don't forget to subscribe to this podcast for the latest episodes.